I'm Christopher Leiden with an open source special on Ralph Waldo Emerson, the Modern. He followed his father's footsteps into the Unitarian ministry after college, then broke out in his mid-30s to become a lay preacher for the rest of his life, a sort of performance artist on the talk circuit, a diamond dealer, somebody said, in moral ideas. The moment of transition was this speech to young ministers, July 1838, in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
In this refulgent summer, it has been a luxury to draw the breath of life. The grass grows, the buds burst, the meadow is spotted with fire and gold in the tint of flowers. The air is full of birds and sweet with the breath of the pine, the balm of Gilead, and the new hay. Night brings no gloom to the heart with its welcome shade. Through the transparent darkness, the stars pour their almost spiritual rays. Humanity under them seems a young child, and the huge globe a toy. The cool night bathes the world as with a river, and prepares our eyes again for the crimson dawn.
Emerson's biographer Robert Richardson took me to Divinity Hall on the Harvard campus to recapture the moment. Let's talk about this speech, the Divinity School Address of 1838, a huge break in his life and in American Christianity, you could say, and also a rupture with Harvard. He was basically excommunicated by the Unitarian establishment at the time and barely forgiven just before his death.
Yeah, he's 35. The senior class of the Divinity School, which was six or seven people, invited him to give the commencement address. And it's a very small deal at the time. It's a very small divinity school. There aren't very many people in it, so there are this handful of students and maybe their families, and they've gotten together. The faculty is not crazy about the person the students have invited to speak, but here he shows up, and he is this young man from Concord who has, for the time, very radical ideas about what Christianity is. And he comes into this room that we are in, which I hadn't even seen this room until a couple of months ago when I went out of my way to sort of find my way up here. It's tucked way back in a corner of Harvard. It's up on the third floor of Divinity Hall. You come in, it doesn't amount to much. It is sort of old oak and Federalist paneling. Doesn't look like it's been used for much of anything for a long time. But here it is. And it's one of these places. It's like the door of Wittenberg Cathedral where Luther nailed up those theses. This is a great place because Emerson stood up in here and said, Christianity is not about a distant time and a distant place and a distant prophet, and miracles aren't over and the whole thing isn't sealed up in the Bible. The whole point of Christianity is incarnation. He brings the whole of religion into the present. He anchors the whole of religion in experience. And this was unforgivable to the biblical literalists and others who were sitting in the audience thinking that they had known how to do religion all along. He was saying that your religious life is in your own hands and your own experience.
So he says Jesus Christ was not exactly God, and he was enormously critical of the preaching establishment. How did they take it?
Well, he was saying that Jesus Christ is not God, except insofar as he has taught us that we are all, and each of us, God. They didn't hear the second part. And the students loved it. The students were, as students often are, young and radical and bent on changing the world, and they went out and changed the world. The faculty hated the speech. People used to cross the street to avoid Emerson after this speech. He got more mail and heard more and got more reviews and more negative reviews about this one speech than he had about everything that he'd written taken together up to that time. And he was shocked. His journals and his letters show that he was really shocked and hurt by the fact that people were attacking him as irreligious, because that wasn't even the beginning of his intention. His intention was to make religion more alive for people by saying that it was their religious experience that mattered.
He gives a wonderful preaching lesson in this talk in which he says basically that the church is dying, that ministers are dull. The snowstorm outside is more interesting than what's going on in the room. People are nodding off. And he says a sermon must be rammed with life. Yeah. Preacher must reveal himself, his struggle, his defeats, his love, his agony.
It's true. And when Emerson talked, you knew that it came from him. And he was the one who said, instantly you know whose words are loaded with life and whose are not. Cut these words and they bleed. That's the way you feel reading Emerson's stuff, that you cut into any one of those things that he said and you will find a real human being.
To me, Bob, the miracle of this talk is that he undoes a Christian dogma in certain ways. He reduces Jesus Christ to one in the true line of prophets. At the same time, here and through the rest of his life, he keeps the language of spirit wildly alive. He's not running away from spiritual mystery or belief, or much less the religious sentiment, as he often calls it.
Yeah. He did not believe, as he said, in historical Christianity. He had trouble with historical rituals. He had trouble with sacraments and the Last Supper. But he was a deeply religious man. But he believed in the kind of religion that the individual person feels. And this is, I think, why he speaks to people today. I talked to somebody in the Unitarian Church, and they said Emerson still brings people into the church. And the reason is that what he talks about is your own capacity for religious experience. It does not depend on external stuff. It doesn't depend on Bibles, on prophets, on buildings, on rituals that were laid down a long time ago. It depends on your susceptibility to religious emotions. This morning, driving in from Concord, it was spectacular. These gray clouds were breaking up and the sun was coming in and the blue was sweeping in. And it was all I could do to keep my hands on the wheel. It was such a glorious day. And I thought, this is what Emerson is doing in this Divinity School address. He says, look out the window at this refulgent summer. This is life. You are alive. It is alive. There is no more important moment than right now. There are no greater people than you right now. Amen. This is tremendous stuff to hear.
I love it that you say it speaks to you and that you take him straight. This is not just an old artifact of New England Yankeedom or something.
No, not at all. I was for many years a teacher, and I taught American literature. And I learned to teach that the great American literature was a tragic American literature. It was Melville and Hawthorne and Poe and the dark side of Emily Dickinson. And I would find that I would sneak home at night and go to the basement and read Emerson and Whitman and Thoreau, sort of slumming among the optimists. And I was one day sitting down there, and I thought, you know, what is the matter with you? Why can't you teach what you believe? You obviously don't believe that the best of American literature is this dark, tragic stuff where you go out and sail on the ocean and sink beneath it, and life is terrible and tragic. Finally, it buries us all. So I started trying to teach this stuff as though I believed it, which I did. And then one day in California, I was trying to write a book, and I had come to the place in, it was Henry Thoreau, where he said, I walk out into the same nature that Moses and Homer walked into. And I remember going for a walk that morning and thinking, what if he's right? What if this is the same world that Homer walked into, that Shakespeare walked into? That nothing has changed. It isn't that the world's gotten older. I've just forgotten that I'm born into the same world they were. I can't tell you how that lifted me up and gave me the idea that nothing matters any more than what you are doing today, than what is being done today. We don't need to worship the past. There is more life to come.
It's pure Emerson.
It's pure Emerson. Well, that's where Henry Thoreau got it from.
And the only good thing about a book is if it brings you to an ecstatic insight. Other than that, it's just...
That's right. But Emerson said books are for nothing but to inspire. And he meant nothing if they don't inspire you. And he would teach people who asked him how to read, and he would say, skim for what interests you. Go as fast as you can. Skim for what interests you and discard the rest. He said, if you start getting absorbed in a book, he said, put it down. Because the reason to read is to start your own team. He had a very sharp notion of why we read. We read to get ourselves going.
It's a definition of grazing. I mean,
you know,
looking for the good stuff, feeding yourself.
That's right. The focus then becomes on what you can make of this,
right,
not just worship of what you have read. He once said, meek young people grow up in libraries, believing it their duty to read, to believe what Cicero, what Locke, what Hobbes have written, forgetting that Cicero, Locke, and Hobbes were young men in libraries when they wrote those books. I remember reading that, and it stood me up straight in my chair in the library, and I thought, yikes, this is what I should be doing. What am I doing sitting here? I should be writing.